Oil is soaring.
The Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Mark Austin Thomas. The price of oil has hit a new high following the Israeli air raids in Lebanon. Crude reached almost $76 a barrel in London this morning, and as Stephen Beard reports, the crisis is spilling over into other financial markets.
For the first time in a decade, Beirut Airport has been hit by Israeli fire. Markets fear that Syria could be sucked into the conflict and that might ignite a wider Middle Eastern war. That potential threat to oil supplies has pushed up the price of crude and down the price of shares. Most European stock markets dropped more than 1% each this morning. European dealers are fretting about the economic costs of even more expensive oil, says Andrew Hilton of the CSFI think tank.
If oil prices rise through $75, $80, perhaps even to $100, some doom and gloomsters are talking about, then the impact of that will be pretty profound on European economies. So it's real.
The escalating violence in Lebanon isn't the only source of upward pressure on the price of crude. Militants knocked out another pipeline in Nigeria today. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
More on Nigeria. Twin explosions hit installations that belong to an Italian oil company in the volatile Delta region of Nigeria. Sabotage is suspected. No word on who's responsible. However, militant groups attacking installations this year have cut Nigeria's daily oil exports by more than 20%. Squirming. That's what a top FEMA official was doing yesterday as he was grilled by lawmakers on Capitol Hill. Congress wants to know why there was so much fraud and abuse in getting money and resources to the right people following 9/11. Hillary Wickay says there were a lot of reports of incompetence.
These are the stories that make government officials cringe. A clean air program that allowed thousands of New Yorkers to get free air conditioners despite not living anywhere near the World Trade Center. Businesses, not even in the Twin Towers, that claimed they were and got money to restart. Eric Thorson is the Inspector General at the U.S. Small Business Administration. He'll testify later today that some of those false claimants are now in jail and that some of the money was recovered. But Thorson says it's nearly impossible to get it all back.
It's a fine line. You want to help immediately to get the money out there, to get it in the hands of the people who need it. On the other hand, there's a responsibility that you do it smartly.
The House Homeland Security Subcommittee plans to propose legislation. The goal? To prevent fraud without slowing down the government help that people need in the wake of major disasters. In Washington, I'm Hillary Wickay for Marketplace.
Business and political officials in the UK are up in arms over the extradition of three British bankers to the U.S. The trio have been indicted in connection with Enron and are set to board a plane today. Now comes news that a former colleague of theirs has been found dead in a park in London. Neil Kulbeck reportedly provided evidence against the bankers, but he wasn't involved in their Enron-related transactions. Scotland Yard hasn't confirmed the cause of death, but reports in the media point to a suicide. Some of the same concerns that are causing oil prices to rise are causing the stock market to tumble. At least it did yesterday. The Dow plunged 121 points to 11,013. The Nasdaq fell almost 2%, 38 points to 2090. This is Marketplace. Disney thinks it can make more by doing less. Lisa Napoli tells us a poor showing in the last two quarters by the movie division prompted the company to bring out the pruning shears.
Disney's been hinting at cutbacks for a while, but it hasn't been clear until now just how much it would slash output. Michael Spire of Daily Variety broke the story. He says, look for the Disney move to have cascading effects throughout Tinseltown.
Everything's a copycat business in Hollywood, and if Disney can appease its shareholders by cutting back on the number of movies and making all of those movies profitable, then everyone will say, wow, that's an amazing thing they did.
Unless, of course, the eggs in fewer baskets strategy doesn't yield a batch of mega hits like Pirates of the Caribbean. If the eight movies turn out to be duds, it could leave the Mouse House chasing its tail. In Los Angeles, I'm Lisa Napoli for Marketplace.
This is a Marketplace Morning Report, produced and distributed by American Public Media.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by LendingTree.com, where you can choose from up to four customized loan offers. 1-800-555-TREE. When banks compete, you win. LendingTree.com. Sustainability coverage is supported in part by the Candida Sustainability Fund of the Tides Foundation, furthering values that contribute to a healthy planet.
This is Marketplace. I'm Mark Austin Thomas. The Group of Eight or G8 summit is set to begin in Russia this weekend, but an important event may take place before that. Russian President Vladimir Putin is hoping that he and President Bush can reach an agreement allowing Russia to join the World Trade Organization. Putin and Bush will meet just prior to the summit. Alan Beatty is the World Trade Editor with the Financial Times. I asked him what Russia gains by joining the WTO.
In terms of actual economics and trade, not that much, because Russia pretty much trades oil and gas, and that's not affected by WTO membership. But they regard joining the World Trade Organization as a kind of sign, a kind of brand, that they are an important, heavy-hitting country, that they're involved in global economic governance. It's important mainly for symbolic reasons.
How have things developed so that the U.S. is the only nation that Russia has not reached an agreement with for admission into the WTO?
There are a couple of reasons. One is that it has some very active companies like banks, for example, who want to get into Russia's financial services sector. The other reason, I think, is that the US in itself is kind of big enough and strong enough to be able to stand up to countries and say, sorry, you are not coming into the WTO until you do this.
Two things the US wants movement on from Russia are a firm commitment to protect intellectual property and access to Russian markets for US agricultural products. What are the chances Russia will move enough for the US?
Well, one of the interesting things about WTO accession is that it's not just what people agree to, it's how they enforce it once they actually get in. The wonderful example being China. The US insisted that China write a lot of laws protecting intellectual property rights. But since China has joined the WTO, the main issue has not been, do they have those laws on the books? Because they do. The main issue has been, are they actually enforcing them? And so by making a big fuss about intellectual property rights in the negotiation with Russia, one of the things the US is doing is saying, once you're in the WTO, you know, we will come down hard on you if you don't do enough to combat this.
The elephant in the room is a vast gas field in the Barents Sea. Chevron and ConocoPhillips in the U.S. are said to be among the potential partners in this deal. I guess my question is that with so much potential money at stake for the U.S., doesn't that give Putin all the leverage he needs to get the WTO deal he wants?
It gives him some of the leverage, but I would say if Putin has power over anyone, it's actually more Europe, because Europe actually depends on Russia's gas.
What does Russia hope to achieve from the G8 summit?
I think what Russia hopes to achieve is to point out that, you know, while it may be not very rich and it may not be a democracy, though they would obviously question that, it is nonetheless a very important pivotal player in fields like oil and gas. And by putting energy and energy security right at the top of the G8 agenda, what Vladimir Putin has sought to do is to take the one issue on which you pretty much have to deal with Russia and using it as leverage to get the rich economies of the world to take Russia seriously as a negotiating partner.
Thanks a lot, Alan.
No problem. Thanks.
Alan Beatty is the World Trade Editor for the Financial Times. And in Los Angeles, I'm Mark Austin Thomas. Thanks for joining us. Have a great day.
American Public Media.
It's not a monster from the...
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.